There aren't many computers when they're switched on, or come to that, that look like this. It's about 7 feet tall and 5 feet wide, and it's got brightly coloured water pumping through a network of clear plastic tubes, tanks and valves. Dominating a seminar room here at Cambridge University, it's believed to be the only remaining working example of the Philips Hydraulic Economics Computer. Brian Henry was part of a team that restored it a few years ago.
What you see when you look at it is a pipe where water is pumped up, which represents total income, which then goes along the top of the machine and comes down into a tank, which takes away taxation and then leaves disposable income, income after taxation, which goes into a tank labelled consumption expenditure. Saving is siphoned off in order to split total income into consumption and savings.
It's a vivid way of seeing the flow of money around the economy, and it really does compute. For on the surface of the water in the savings tank. When that rises, an intricate set of pulleys, wires and valves alters the interest rate. That in turn affects the amount of investment,
which comes in at the other side, together with exports minus imports, to give you total expenditure, which is now a box at the bottom of the machine, and the water in that box is then pumped back up the pipe that we started with on the left-hand side. So there you have a circular flow of water designed according to the basic principles of Keynesian income determination.
To understand the Philips Hydraulic Computer, you really do have to see it. And that's the point. This unique machine was built more than 50 years ago to turn dry mathematical equations into a colourful, noisy display that actually showed students how the national economy worked. Brian Henry again.
I remember Philips demonstrating the Philips machine. There was this small man, bald-headed, always wore a suit and always seemed to be smoking. And I have to say, for the first time as a student, I was then in the third year, I understood what was meant by the circular flow of income. It was such a supreme visual telling of the mechanics of the Keynesian idea that I think all students felt for the first time that they started to understand what the basic ideas were all about.
Brian Henry's now director of the Centre for International Macroeconomics at Oxford University. But who was Bill Phillips, the man who, at a time when all the excitement was about the possibility of electronic computers, conceived this extraordinary watery device? Nicholas Barr, now a reader at the London School of Economics, was a student there when he first met Phillips.
Despite his eminence, he was always very friendly, very approachable, surprisingly shy, and an absolutely brilliant teacher. A colleague of mine has referred to Bill Phillips as the Crocodile Dundee of economics. He grew up in rural New Zealand, went to Australia around the age of 15, hunted crocodiles. He was an electrician in an outdoor cinema. He was a real rolling stone. He travelled to London on the Trans-Siberian Express, landing up in London in 1938.
Bill Phillips just had time to complete his studies as an electrical engineer before war broke out in 1939. He joined up and was sent straight back to the Far East. He received a citation for gallantry as the Japanese swept across British-held territory. But imminent capture, as a later LSE colleague Richard Lipsy recalls, always seemed on the cards.
A group of them found a bay in an old abandoned bus, which they filled up the windows and put a sail on, put a keel on it, and they were going to sail away to Australia to escape. Fortunately, I think the Japanese had discovered them and before they had went off on this crazy enterprise. And that, I suspect, is apocryphal, but it's an awfully good story. And it's so typical of Bill. It's exactly what he'd do. You know, he wouldn't give up. He'd find some absolutely crazy solution, and he'd give it a try.
Bill Phillips lost no time in putting that inventiveness to good use in the grim conditions of the prisoner of war camp. Nicholas Barr again.
This is the New Zealand part of Bill Phillips. New Zealand is a small country. When people need a problem fixed, they fix it themselves. And Bill Phillips, as an electrical engineer and knowing about radio in the Japanese prisoner of war camp, made a very, very tiny crystal set that was hidden in a chair leg. And it was Bill Phillips who heard over the crystal set news that he didn't fully understand at the time of the detonation of the first atomic bomb in Hiroshima.
To have been caught with that radio would have meant summary execution. But his fellow prisoners had further reason to be grateful for Bill Phillips' compulsive need to invent. He designed a basic immersion heater, which, when plugged into the camp lights, could boil up a mug of tea. The POWs made so many of them that every night, when they made their bedtime cuppers, the camp lights dimmed. It said the Japanese guards never did find out why. Phillips came back to Britain and enrolled at the LSE. He chose to do sociology, because he'd been fascinated by the way the prisoners had organized themselves in the camps. But the subject, it turned out, didn't really interest him. What did was something he had to study on the side, economics.
Bill Phillips found economics very difficult, but he was intrigued by an analogy in a famous economics textbook by Kenneth Boulding, which compared monetary macroeconomic flows with hydraulic flows. This gave Bill Phillips a clue, and he then started translating the economics into hydraulics. In other words, from a language he didn't understand into a language which he did.
Phillips became convinced that the uncertain science of economics could only benefit from the application of some hard-headed engineering principles. And with the help of Walter Newlin, an economics student a year ahead of him, he spelled out his ideas in a now famous paper. The original is among Walter Newlin's most prized possessions.
This is the original paper, and it's the only copy. I have to be very careful how I handle it. This particular diagram shows savings, investment, and interest. And this showed the thing that I went wild about. It showed an interrelation which would be dynamic.
Simply comparing the workings of an economy to the flow of water was old hat. But this was a totally new idea. That water flows could show how one economic variable, the interest rate, for example, could change over time because of what was happening with another variable, such as the level of savings.
That was the fundamental achievement of that drawing. I spotted it. I didn't read the rest of the article. I was carried, I asked him if we couldn't make something that actually did this. And he said, yes, it's not impossible. And I'm afraid he spent most of the vacation before the exam working on how he would actually build this model. We worked in a garage, and the ingenuity that he used in making that thing, it really was incredible.
Brilliant though his idea was, Bill Phillips was still only a sociology graduate, with a bare third at that. But fortunately, one of the LSE's most prestigious professors of economics, James Mead, was something of a gadget freak, and was rarely taken with a hydraulic computer. He promised Phillips he could demonstrate it at the school's prestigious Lionel Robbins seminar, then held every Wednesday afternoon. His former colleague, Richard Lipsey, still remembers what Phillips told him about that momentous day.
Everybody was there to sharpen their knives. I won't mention any particular names. Some of them are still alive, but the young Turks were all there to take this upstart apart. What's he doing here? He set up his machine and got it going and started to talk about it, and it became a few biting questions from the junior staff, and within 5 minutes, they kept quiet. Bill had pretty well shown in 5 minutes that he knew more than they did about how to model this kind of thing, so they bloody well better shut up, because they were going to show themselves off as not knowing as much as his third-class sociology student.
On the strength of that performance alone, Phillips was offered a lectureship in the economics department. Within 9 years, he was a professor. It was complete vindication of the confidence James Mead had shown in his young protege.
When they first met, Bill Phillips was a wild, wacky undergraduate in sociology with some crazy idea for a machine, and James Mead was a very eminent professor at the LSE. James Mead took Bill Phillips seriously, supported him building the machine. Indeed, you could say, if James Mead had laughed at Bill Phillips, the undergraduate, then Bill Phillips, the great economist, might never have happened.
Bill Phillips' machine was soon in constant demand by his previously skeptical colleagues.
but lecture rooms and water pumps didn't always mix.
If you misset it badly, it would start to overflow. We talk about an overheating economy. Well, this could happen quite literally. It could sort of start leaking water all over the place. Or you could simply get a leak in one of the joins. So Bill Phillips was regularly called in to repair the machine or set the settings back to the default from which they'd been allowed to stray too far by a colleague who didn't fully understand the machine.
If the leaks were a nuisance, they were also entertaining, and the machine became something of a cause célèbre among students. It was even lampooned in Punch. But the hydraulic computer wasn't just a teaching aid. Its calculations were accurate to within 2%, and it was called in to settle some of the great disputes of the time. James Mead was particularly inventive in finding new uses for it.
At James Mead's request, Bill Phillips made a second machine that was a mirror image of the first one and devised a linkage for the two machines. So that way you could have an international economy. One machine in today's terms could be the EU and the other the United States. And you could then show how if one country ran too large a budget deficit, that could cause turbulence in the other country. So you could show how economies were linked up. They were no longer independent islands, that economic events in America affect the European economies.
Because the machine was capable of real modelling and forecasting, more than a dozen were built. Customers were universities, companies, even governments.
When the machine first came out, it was the only macroeconomic simulation model that there was. So it was useful in practical terms for governments trying to maintain full employment. A lot of other universities bought Phillips machines. A fair number were sold in the United States, including the Ford Motor Company and I believe also the Central Bank of Guatemala. Those that were bought by companies like Ford, I think, were intended to try to come up with predictions of what was going to happen in a year or two ahead. In other words, to be used as macroeconomic forecasting tools.
Bill Phillips was more than a one-invention economist. Among a number of significant contributions to the discipline, he defined a relationship between inflation and unemployment that undergraduates around the world know as the Phillips curve. But he was a restless man, unconvinced of the value of an academic life in London. He gave up his post and returned to Australia, where he could devote more time to studying Chinese, a passion that dated back to his days as a prisoner of war. But those days had also undermined his health. In 1975, he died of a stroke at the age of 60. Bill Phillips was never prolific. He published no more than a dozen or so papers. But Nicholas Barr has no doubt that there was something special about him, both as an economist and as a person.
Bill Phillips was one of the giants that strode the profession in the third quarter of the 20th century. I mean, he really produced path-breaking research that moved economics in a major way. He was also very warm, friendly, quiet, wry sense of humour, a wonderful teacher. He's one of those rare people that whenever his name is mentioned to anyone who knew him, a warm smile crosses the person's face.
Water on the Brain was presented by Mark Whittaker and produced by Mike Halley. It was the final part of Electronic Brains, a Pennine production.